Hey there, creatives. My name is Cecilia, and I'd like to welcome you to our weekly podcast, where we get to hear stories and insights from leaders in the Catholic creative world every week. In this podcast, Max Haben tells the relatable and inspiring story of his journey as a creative. A hip-hop rapper turned film director, he recently landed a gig directing a music video for Owl City. Now, I'm not going to spoil it for you, so you'll just have to keep listening to find out how he did it. But the thing that stuck out to me about that chapter of his story was his courage in just putting himself out there and taking the risk. He was confident in what he had done, and he trusted his journey in getting to that point. This is something I struggle with. I struggle to trust myself and to trust my journey. But the truth is, I am enough. I do have what it takes. All I need to do is believe it and then put myself out there. I hope Max's story speaks to your creative heart. Let's check it out.
And last time we talked, you were just sort of coming off the whole Owl City thing, blowing up the internet, and then you made the Just Another Dance video. Like, dude, you're a big deal now. How does that feel?
Oh, man, I don't know. It's, it's for me, I'm not, like, as much thinking about, you know, the success of the videos as just trying to be able to pay the bills.
Yeah.
Like, that's been the biggest thing for me is that, you know, it's 2018 now. I went freelance last July, I think, 2017. So in a couple months, it'll be a year. So, you know, for me, that's like the biggest success is like, it's just this sort of freelance experiment is working.
Yeah.
My wife hasn't made me go get a full-time job yet. And, like that's what I'm most excited about. So that feels
yeah,
really good.
Man. It's like freedom.
Exactly. It's... Yes.
Dude, did you like have a feeling like I cannot believe that this is actually working?
Like, yeah.
Did that ever hit you?
Yeah, I do. I think, it can be surreal sometimes. But at the same time, it's like becoming so kind of mundane too, you know, of like, oh, this is my job now. And this is how I'm making a living. And, it's, you know, not, you know, I wouldn't say it's traditional, but I think it's like, oh, this is actually kind of practical for me and for our family and it's working and there's some really good benefits to it. And, you know, once you make that leap, you're just kind of like, oh, this isn't as like crazy and weird as I thought it would be, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I remember when the job was like, I basically put in my notice and was leaving like my jobs plural in August of 2015. And it was so, I just didn't know what it was going to be like to be on the other side of it. Like it just felt so scary to not have a paycheck coming in and like that being something stable. And yeah, when I woke up, you know, that Monday and it was just like, well, I don't have to go anywhere. Like it was amazing. All of a sudden it was just like, this is what normal life is like. I can't believe that I haven't been living this way before.
Yeah.
You know,
you feel like you're getting away with something almost, you know,
yeah.
Like obviously it comes with the stress, but if you can handle like the stresses of it and the, you know, you feel kind of like, I mean, who doesn't want to work for themselves, you know?
Yeah, seriously. I kind of saw this happening online, right? Like you had posted, I'm thinking about going freelance. You're working for the Archdiocese of DC. I want to hear a little bit about that, just the decision-making kind of process that led up to it. Like what were some of the moments that led you there to jumping out?
Yeah. I think for most of my wife, Aubrey and I's marriage, it'd been sort of this sort of point of tension of like, this is what I want to do and I know it's what I want to do, but just not being the right timing. So I don't know if it got to a point where it was just like, I don't know if it was the right timing or not, but I think it just got to a point where I was going to go crazy, you know, if I had to sit in a cubicle for another day, you know, literally. I mean, I think mostly it was like, I loved everybody at the Archdiocese and they were great people, but it was just sort of this point of, transition for them. And so I came into this job and I was super pumped and like ambitious and wanting to kind of help elevate the media. But there was all this turnover happening and, you know, just not a lot of, you know, the timing of that just wasn't great for me personally. And it just wasn't working well. And so it just got to this boiling point of like, I really felt like I just needed to make the leap, you know, like it'd been this thing that my wife had been talking about for a long time and I needed to try. And we were in a position where I felt like, you know, practically financially, some of these variables that are important were, you know, obviously it wasn't perfect. I don't think there's ever an ideal time to like jump full time freelance with a 1-year-old baby and a wife who stays at home. And, you know, they're dependent on you for a paycheck and health insurance. And I don't know if that's ever like an easy transition, but I felt like some of those variables were in a good enough place where I could take a calculated risk and just go for it. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, like we talked about the All City stuff happening, that stuff was like unfolding at the same time. So like there was these opportunities happening outside of work that I was more into than my day-to-day 9-to-5, you know? And I really felt like if I just sort of went all in on those, then that would pay off. And, in a lot of ways it has. And it's also been, you know, it hasn't been the easiest of transitions either. There's, you know, the real kind of cons to working for yourself too, and that especially in that transition period. But I don't regret it, and like I said, my wife hasn't made me go back to get a full-time job, so far the experiment is working.
Yeah, well, congrats, man. It's something to celebrate for sure. I think when we had first met, sort of backing up a little bit, you were a freelance rapper at one point. So I just wanted to hear about like the two sort of experiences of art making and how you got into film.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a deep love for hip hop music. Anybody who would meet me and see my skin complexion and, you know, a white boy from Minnesota probably would not expect
hear your
that.
Voice, you know?
yeah. You know, the funny thing is Minneapolis, where I come from, is like a hotbed for independent, like alternative hip hop. And you've lived in the Twin Cities for a while, so you might have, I don't know if you caught wind of any of that sort of music scene, but it's this just hotbed of like underground hip hop. For whatever reason, it's sprouted out there, and it's you know, a lot of people don't know about it, but it's like, it's got this little niche of just following that's really amazing. And it's like the capital of underground alternative hip hop music. So
I did not know that.
Yeah. It's, I mean, there's a ton of artists that come from like literally like the neighborhoods that I grew up in, and Atmosphere and the Rhymesayers record label and Brother Ali and Doomtree and all these other people that, you know, really successful. And most of them aren't, you know, black kids. It's like a lot of white kids, and, you know, everybody, it's just kind of the thing there. Like, it doesn't matter if you're the nerdiest kid in science class, like you have a beat machine and you're making hip hop beats, you know? I mean, like, it's just kind of part of the culture. So that, I got swept up in that. And I was probably 19 or 20 or 20 years old when I really started getting into hip hop. And that was really my first love when it comes to creativity and art. You know, I was kind of a late bloomer with the arts, because, you know, my whole childhood was just sports. You know, I was a jock growing up, and once that ended, I started to realize, oh, I really like writing poetry, and I like these beats and this music, and it all started to kind of like just become this passion, and this kind of discovery of a new passion, and really dedicated myself to it actually pretty seriously. You know, I made an album, and for a while I was performing shows in the Twin Cities, and you know, had a little bit of a following, and for a while really thought that's what I wanted to like give my life to, you know, give my kind of what I wanted my career to be. And so I did that for the first part of my 20s, like 20 to 25, I was really pursuing hip hop.
So tell me about like the first time you sat down and was like, I'm going to write a rap song right now.
I think I was watching like 8 Mile or something. Like the battle scene at the end. No, not really, but it was just a gradual thing. Like a few of my friends in high school were into hip-hop music, and they put me onto some really really good artists that I never heard about, Common and Tribe Called Quest and Jay-Z, you know, I didn't really listen to them much, and just got super into it as a fan first. And then, like, one day I was just kind of, like, you know, rapping to myself. I think one of my friends heard me, and he was like, "What did you just say? That was really good." And I was like, "Yeah, that was kind of good." And so I just started writing them down, and I know you're, I've seen some of your poetry. I know you're, you know, hip-hop really is just writing poetry to beats, you know, mm-hmm. And really, I think that's what I fell in love with, was the writing process and the lyrical process. And mm-hmm. And even in college, I got into, you know, for a while, I thought that I would, you know, major in English or, you know, try to pursue some sort of writing or poetry, you know, avenue because of that. And, you know, I just really started to fall in love with that process of writing lyrics and rhymes.
Yeah. So did you end up majoring in like a liberal arts thing?
My degree was Catholic studies.
Okay, cool. So how did that like connect with the rapping?
Naturally Catholic studies then, right? yeah, you know, I went through, you know, my kind of reversion in college. And we, you know, we were at St. Thomas together, and so you know some of the environment there. The Catholic environment was really strong there, and there's a great Catholic studies department. And my brother Jack, who's a couple years younger than me, was in the seminary at SJV. And you know, I had grown up Catholic and went to Catholic school for a while, and you know, kind of fell away, you know, classic story of just falling away from the faith in college, and then, you know, just being at this prodigal son point, you know, of like, this is not satisfying me. And, you know, really reaching out to, for something, of substance and something to give me purpose. And, you know, God just led me back to the faith and through a number of different resources and people and environments. So that was at St. Thomas, probably my junior year is when I really started going back to church and, you know, reading the Bible and get involved with some other Christians on campus. And then along with that, my love for hip hop, I really saw as naturally just a way to kind of express, you know, hip hop is very expressive, you know, lyrically you can just say things, you know, you can really say a message very clearly. And so it was a great outlet for me to sort of talk about what God was doing in my life and kind of where I'd been. A lot of my lyrics were about, you know, kind of that way, like I mentioned, that prodigal son story. I had a song called The Prodigal Son. You know, it was just a great outlet for me to kind of express that. And so that naturally sort of transitioned with my faith. The music became more, you know, more in line with Catholicism too, and kind of an outlet for expressing that.
Yeah, I definitely like, I feel like, so I started writing poetry at around the same time, sophomore year of college, and it was a major moment of transition for me in a lot of ways. You know, it's always like college self-discovery, right? But like, for me, like writing was almost like so made so urgent by that. Like I had to go inside to be able to figure out how to process and navigate, what was going on in my life and like what was going on in my heart. So I feel like that time of transition for me was like probably the most, most creatively inspired time of my life. How was your writing sort of in your creative, center? How is that a part of the whole transition of like returning?
Yeah. I mean, it was just, like I said, it was a great outlet. And, you know, my conversion was very, I don't want to say the word emotional, but it was powerful, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I think a lot of people will talk about having really gradual, you know, sort of transformation of faith and spiritual life, and it was gradual, but there was like a very like distinct moment of mm-hmm. like, you know, experiencing it. And so music is a very experiential thing too, emotionally, and you experience it deeply and powerfully. And so I think those two things, the way that I experienced the Lord speaking to me, translated to how I then sort of spoke through the music and he spoke through the music, you know. I think that definitely related, and the inspiration that I felt in my relationship with the Lord, and you know, just the excitement I had for the faith, and just to find this, you know, this kind of this purpose and this meaning, was, I think, really a tangible thing that translated into the music as well for other people. And I think people, you know, a number of occasions, like, experienced that and communicated that to me, that that was something they could notice, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you, as you started to, like, grow as a writer and, like, really sewing into the, what was your moniker?
It was just Max Heyman.
Okay. Yeah, there wasn't any,
no cool names. I tried to come up with a couple of, like, just Max Heyman.
That's good. It's like, you know, I think it fits. But there's something about, like, so I was doing music as well, really, pushing into, had done a band in high school, and once I graduated seminary, I was doing a lot of, like, worship and trying to make that, a thing, be a Catholic celebrity or whatever. And, it just wasn't working, and I had to let the dream die, which was a really hard thing to do for me. And I'm just wondering, like, what the story was of that for you, because obviously you're not really pursuing that in the same way anymore. So what's the story of it?
Yeah, I think I had a very similar experience. You know, it's been awesome to see this film thing unfold, but, you know, in a lot of ways, it's sort of like I first had to go through a very hard experience of something not working out, you know, and being really passionate about something and really having a vision for it, but then that door, you know, slamming shut and kind of closing on you. And, you know, I think it's something I experienced when I was doing music, was like, I was really passionate about it, and there were certain things that were kind of signaling, like, I'm good at this, but then again, it really wasn't taking off, you know, in a certain way. It didn't seem 100% anointed. And, you know, I think I noticed that, but I had a hard time coming to terms with that for a while. But then, you know, God had a couple ways of just kind of, I think, confirming that.
Yeah,
one of them was getting married, and, you know, or preparing to get married. And, you know, my wife's, comes from a very musical family, and her sister actually is a really, accomplished, contemporary Christian musician, named Danielle Rose. And she grew up watching Danielle do music ministry. And when we were, you know, and I kind of was like, oh yeah, like, this is a great connection for me. Like, Danielle's in the Catholic world, that we're going to connect. And, that'll really be helpful for my career. And the funny thing is, when we were kind of discerning marriage, Aubrey's like, yeah, you know, I'm not interested in being married to a traveling musician. Sorry. she was very, you know, lovingly honest about it. You know, and that came up in our discernment, and it was like this point of like, wow, either I just, like, don't marry her, or I keep pursuing music. And it was very clear to me that I was supposed to marry her. And so that was like a concrete way of like, okay, I have to let this go, you know, and mm-hmm. God is kind of calling me to give it up. And that door just shut. And it was very quickly too, thankfully, that the desire just kind of went away too. Like, it was just kind of simultaneously, like, you know, an affirmation that this just isn't, you know, this door isn't opening. So
how did that affect you as a person though? Like, having an artistic dream sort of, fall apart, because you didn't know that you were going to have this other door open up yet. So what was it like being in that space?
Yeah, it was tough, man. It was, you know, when initially there was a lot of peace about it, but it was also a time of confusion. You know, I was getting married. I had a Catholic studies degree. I'd been working for a kind of nonprofit ministry for a few years. I ran out of college. I had a ton of student loans and not a lot of work, you know, professional work experience. And, you know, I think traditionally the life of an artist or the life of a creative is not necessarily blessed by everybody you talk to, you know? You tell people you want to be a musician, you tell people you want to be a filmmaker or an artist, you know, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, that's a nice dream, you know, but you got to get, you know, figure out what your real job is going to be, you know? And you know, I had people saying that, I think, in certain ways. And I think I was telling myself that, too. You know, I was kind of like, you know, I guess this kind of means, like, I just got to pray a few extra St. Joseph novenas, you know, and, like, just pick up my cross and, like, you know, button my tie and shirt and go to work, you know. And just kind of, like, not, you know, and just, you know, and that, but that just didn't sit right with me either, you know, like. And so I started getting a little real with God, you know, and just being like, okay, if I'm giving this up, you've got to, you know, you've got this desire in my heart to create and to be an artist, you know, like, even though I gave up the music thing, that's still there. So I need something, you know what I mean? Like, and it was more than just like, oh, I need to pick up a guitar and have like a hobby. You know what I mean? It was like, I feel called to be an artist. I feel called to be to create and to communicate beauty to other people, and that's the only thing I feel called to vocationally, you know. I don't feel called to be a teacher. I don't feel called to be a computer programmer, you know. This is what I feel called to, and so I started being honest with God and just saying, God, you got to do this, you know, and show me, because that's there, that desire is there for a reason, you know. You're not just gonna make, like, torture me with it for the rest of my life. You know, so, like, there was this confusion, but there was this confidence in that, too, that I was recognizing that was in my heart still. And I knew if God had it there, he had it there for a reason. So I just started praying and just looking for what door was going to open up next, you know.
Were you making any art during that transition as a way to, like, grapple with this whole, I guess, just experience? Were you still, like, writing poetry or anything like that?
Yeah, it was funny because, like, I think I kind of tried. It was sort of like a depressing sort of season for me because I wasn't really, you know, and there was this desire there, but I tried, like, writing some lyrics and stuff, but it was just not flowing anymore, you know. It wasn't, the love wasn't there anymore, the inspiration wasn't really there anymore, and so, yeah, it was sort of like this search that began, you know. It was a busy season too, so, you know, I was getting married, I had to find a job. You know, I was moving. And so a lot of that busy stuff sort of kept me, you know, I was like, all right, well, I just got to focus on this. But then once, like, you know, the honeymoon faded out and, you know, like, I settled into this, you know, just the first job I could find, you know, it's not.
Which was what?
I was doing, like, tech support for a software company up in Duluth, Minnesota. And, you know, that's where my wife's from. And so she had a job too. So it was good. We both had jobs, you know. But, you know, I was just like, I was telling her when I came home, I was like, I need to find something creative to do. Like, and so I just started searching, you know, I kind of fell into filmmaking. I don't know, like, that's kind of when, you know, I started searching and started reading online. I mean, you know, I was like, you know, just started thinking about what can I do that's, like, creative and, you know, artistic and can also earn a living and support a family. And filmmaking actually was, I was like, you know, this is sort of like an industry that's coming up, you know, it's like a growing industry, and you can buy a DSLR for really cheap and start, you know, start learning it. So that's pretty much what I did, was I just kind of started teaching myself and learned a lot online and shooting stuff. So.
So what was the first time you actually, like, made money with that?
I actually convinced the Archdiocese of Duluth, or the Diocese of Duluth. And my wife worked for the Diocese of Duluth as she was fundraiser and, like, development. And so she was really, you know, buddy with the bishop, and, you know, so I somehow convinced them to pay me to do, like, a documentary for their 125th anniversary of the diocese, and literally didn't have a camera, but convinced them to pay, like, hire me. And I was like, I'll use that money to go buy a camera. Little did they know.
Oh, man, I love it. Dude, I love that hustle so much.
Yeah, you know, so, like, that. They paid me, and I bought a camera and a computer and got Premiere and just started doing it.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean, because I actually paid for my first camera with my first paid gig as well.
Great. I'm telling you, it's a good industry to get into. Like, people will start paying you before you even know what you're doing.
Yeah, because they don't know what you're doing yet. So like, how did you end up, like, moving into doing that in a more serious way? Like, how did the door open up before you for that?
Yeah, it was, you know, it from there it was like just a lot of hard work for sure, you know. I started to fall in love with it. I think at a certain point I just clicked, like, this is what I want to do, you know. And, you know, I was working my 9-to-5 job at the software company, which was, you know, pretty soul sucking work. And,
sounds soul sucking.
Yeah, not a great environment. And, but I started just like, you know, doing some video stuff on the side on my own. And then I convinced the local news station, actually one of like the ABC, you know, local affiliate news stations, to hire me as a photojournalist, or like, you know, the video guy that goes out and shoots the news stories. And somehow, again, like, convinced him, you know, the second time around. I think the first time he was like, no. The second time, finally, you know, I badgered him enough and he let me do it. And so
wait, how did you badger him? Like,
actually, there was a guy from my church that worked there, and mm-hmm. so like I found that out and I went to him. I was like, hey, can you talk to the chief photographer and like say, because they, you know, they bring in like interns from, you know, college, you know, the students who are studying film at the nearby college, they'll bring them in. So you don't have to be super qualified. So I was right, just like, look, I know how to use a camera. Just, you know, hire me to be a part-time, you know, video guy.
And he said no. And then you're like, screw that.
I kind of like, all right, whatever. I tried the other news stations, but then I found out there was this guy that worked there in like their marketing mm-hmm. department. He put a good word for me. And like, finally, chief photographer's like, all right, fine. He's like, show me your reel. And I was like, oh shoot, I don't have a reel. And so I like went down to the beach and like shot a couple shots of like some kids or something in the sand, and then brought it back, and he hired me. And and that was actually a really, it was, you know, not necessarily what I want to do long term, like news, you know, journalism, but that was a great experience for me. And you know, I did that for like 8 or 9 months, and that was a really, you know, I was learning a bunch online and teaching myself, but that was like an opportunity to get my hands on a camera, you know, on a regular basis. And so I was shooting 3 days a week for the news, you know, and so like it's not terribly difficult, but it's also like you're shooting for the news, you know, so mm-hmm. people are going to be watching this at night, and mostly elderly people probably, you know, like that watch the news still, but... Nonetheless, and then, you know, you're editing, you know, we were using Premiere and editing, and so I'm cutting news stories, and you have to go shoot it and then come back to the newsroom, you know, and in like an hour turn the story around, like a 30-second or 60-second story or whatever. And so I had to get really, you know, quick at editing, and it was great, like, just hands-on experience right off the bat, and I was really thankful for that. But I was doing that in addition to my full-time job then, so I was doing that, like, in the evenings and the weekends. And so it was, you know, it was like hustling right away, you know, for the first year.
It's a lot of hustle. Yeah. Yeah. Dude, I loved that you stayed on that guy. Like when I was starting, man, I was just, I expected no from everybody, you know, like anytime somebody said yes, it was like, are you, wait, what'd you say? Like for real? But then, it was very hard for me, I guess in my pride, to sort of like humble myself to go back to someone who had said no and like either try again or trust that somehow like this wasn't, to not take that personally and just get discouraged, you know, during that time. So I think that's really cool that you showed that sort of confidence and hustle, that you're willing to like have faith in yourself for that.
Well, when you're desperate, you know, like, and I'm serious, like when you're like looking at the next 30 years of your life and you're trying to figure out what am I going to be doing for 40 hours a week. And, you know, it's not everything, but that's a lot of your time, you know, like, and you see that and you see that reality, and you're in a position where you're almost 30 years old, you know, and you'll swallow your pride really quick, you know?
Yeah.
So
it's like, I will do anything not to do this for the rest of my life.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where I was. I was scrapping, man. Like, I was scrapping.
I love it, though. That desperation, it really bears some fruit, though. Because, like, one of the things that I think is really interesting is that from the sort of composting of your original dream, you've, allowed this other... even like much more anointed thing to grow, right? Like even in a literal way that you were into music, and then a lot of your breaks have come through doing music videos that are really like more holistic than just writing the music yourself, right? So like, I'd love to hear about how, I don't know, how you see that now that you're beyond the hustle and you've started to like have stability as an artist.
Yeah, like you said, the music videos have been, it's funny because everybody I've talked to in the industry has told me like, yeah, there's no money in music videos. You need to try to get commercial jobs. You need to try to do branded content, which I think is true. But for me, it's music videos have been like the thing that actually have enabled me to sort of, you know, make this work. And just right off the bat have been the opportunities have opened up and, have paid the bills too. And so, yeah, I had, the first music video I did was naturally a hip hop music video that I did for a local artist here in DC. So, you know, I was in Duluth, Minnesota. That's where I was kind of learning the film. Moved here to DC, and we moved here about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And there was a local artist here named Marley. She's a hip hop artist who I did a music video for. And
is that the one you did with JP?
Yeah, that's the first thing that JP Summers and I collaborated on. And he flew out here and shot it. And I directed it. That's when I started kind of calling myself like a director.
Yeah.
It's the first thing I sort of directed. And so for people, you know, who don't maybe understand like the positions in filmmaking, like there's the film director and then there's the cinematographer. And the cinematographer, you know, shoots the video and does all the camera, you know, typically does the camera work and lighting. And the director is working with talent and sort of the visionary for, you know, the aesthetic of the piece and sort of driving the ship. And so, you know, up until then I was doing everything. I was one man banding, you know, just shooting, editing, directing, pretty, you know how it is, like just doing everything. And so that was the first time where I was like kind of in a position of collaboration and working with the crew. And, it turned out, really well, a lot better than I think I thought it would. And, you know, that was sort of the, you know, that video was really a turning point for just like the quality of work getting to a certain level. And then it was that, and plus a couple of other circumstances that led to the Owl City music video happening. So
dude, like one of the things that I feel like is really interesting there is like the taking the risk to step out again, like way beyond the comfort zone. Like JP obviously is one, somebody who is very experienced and like he's not somebody you just call up and be like, hey man, you want to like do something together on the weekend with, like that's there's some risk involved to exposing yourself to like collaborating with somebody at that level. So I just want to hear the story of like deciding to do that.
Yeah, no, JP was, we were both involved in, you know, a couple of the Facebook groups with the Catholic community. And you know, we just at a certain point, I think, you know, communicated via some sort of direct message. And, you know, we're just chatting about, you know, kind of the work we wanted to do. And I think we both recognized in each other, like kind of a similar sensibility taste wise and, you know, just kind of where we wanted to go, with the next step in our careers. And yeah, he was more experienced than me, a few more years of experience, but you know, I think JP, he's a really humble guy, you know, like he's just really down to earth and, you know, super talented. But once you get to know him, like he's not somebody that looks down on people, you know? And so like we very quickly, like, you know, he treated me like a peer. I think he was one of the first people that really instilled confidence in me as a filmmaker, you know, to be like, you know, you've got chops, like you can do this. And, you know, like, let's just make something cool together, you know? And like, you know, he was just like, you know, just call yourself a director and I'll be the DP and like, let's just go do something, you know? And so it was awesome. And, you know, you need relationships in this business. And if you're going to survive, like you need that community, you need that fellowship and like just camaraderie. And like, I think that relationship for me has been a big one. And for him too, you know, I think, both of us we've become really good friends, you know, and it all started just with like, you know, two guys who were kind of like, you know, like-minded and really trying to just do good work, you know? And so, yeah, that was an awesome experience.
And you guys found each other through Facebook?
Yeah, I think we'd known about each other, you know, just through the Facebook groups and probably commented a couple times back and forth. But at a certain point, you know, I think just the work I was doing, I think he started to recognize, okay, he's like, you know, he's trying to do this type of work. And, you know, I'd seen some of the stuff he was doing. And, you know, I always thought, like, I think we both saw, like, a complementarity to what we were each doing, like how we could. And that's really what it was. It was just like a great collaborative relationship because he wanted to be able to focus more on DPing and doing the cinematography thing. And I wanted to see, you know, I was kind of coming into my realization that I wanted to focus more on directing and not, you know, getting into technical stuff and trying to be more, you know, cast a vision. And so that just worked really well.
Dear everyone, this is Anthony. I just really wanted to say that this has been a big year for the community. And last year, we didn't know what the Catholic Creatives movement really was about. We just felt like God was doing something, and we didn't want to miss out on it. So not knowing what the hell was going to happen, around 90 of us creatives descended upon Dallas and showed up in person for the first summit. What happened there was really kind of crazy, and it's not something that could be really described or hyped up by a podcast, but suffice it to say, we discovered new best friends, kindred spirits that we could share deeply with, to trust, to be in the trenches with. Some of us discovered love. Some of us got new jobs. Some of us decided to move across the country to work together. It was amazing. And in all of that, we discovered a huge mission, a part to play together in God's story of saving the world. You know, many of us have not really been able to believe that there could be an event with Catholic in the name where we could really fit in. Many of us couldn't see how it could be worth being away from our families or putting down our meager freelance savings to jump on a plane and head out, but it paid off for us in all the ways, even in money, because it created a really powerful ecosystem of talented allies that could trust each other. Right now, the second summit is only 3 months away. And we're praying over all the applicants and over who we feel like is supposed to come together for that. And we just want to say, check your September now, because if you get an invite sometime in the next couple of weeks, you need to be ready to get it quick, because it will sell out quickly. And trust me when I say we want you there and we don't want you to miss it. I can't wait to see you all in person. And I also can't wait for the life-changing conversations that are going to happen there. Finally, if you don't get an invite this year, I also want to say, keep making. It's not a contest. It doesn't mean that you aren't cool enough or good enough or something like that. It just means that for whatever reason, we weren't able to get to you this year. But once we're through the summit, we do plan to do a series of regional events that will allow us to bring what happened at the summit to all of you. So stay tuned and keep creating. One of the things that I've really loved about being in film is that there is such a collaborative sort of requirement. Like, if you want to get good, you have to collaborate because you have to specialize. And the only way to specialize is to find other people that like want to do the same kind of thing that you do, but like do a different part of it, right? And I think as Catholic Creatives grows and like this sort of Catholic artistic movement grows, like one of the things that I'm just really excited about is seeing those really core collaborative relationships develop, because it just like it's so good for all of us whenever those happen. So yeah,
I agree totally 100%, and that's been the biggest revelation for me with filmmaking. Is I always thought it was just going to be me with a camera, you know, one man banding, which you can do and a lot of people do and have, you know, you can be successful and, you know, make a living, but if you want to get to a certain level, you have to enter into the collaborative element of filmmaking and working with crews. And I would go as far to say there's probably filmmaker, you know, people out there who don't know it, but should be making films, because there's literally it, you know, there's room for any skill set. There's room for so many different personality types on a film set and in the process of making a film that. I would go as far to say that like anybody could find a place. You know, it's really just that's the beauty of filmmaking, is really like it's so diverse in the types of people that can be involved in a part of it. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah. So how did that music video lead to the Owl City thing?
Well, it wasn't directly because of the music video, but sort of, you know, we talked about the doors opening, right, and just sort of like God's anointing on things. And I think this is where I really started to see just like sort of doors opening up that I was like, whoa, you know, like this is, you know, God's hand seems to be on this, you know. And what happened was, so when I was starting out in filmmaking, another way I was, you know, getting work and learning the craft was shooting wedding films. That's one of the first things I did too, was I shot a wedding film for a friend and then, you know, kind of started a little like wedding film business. And, you know, I've probably shot, you know, 15, 20 wedding films over the last few years. And the first wedding film I ever shot, like the first thing I ever did, there was the photographer showed up and she was just like this bubbly, like just the kindest, nicest, like young lady that you've ever met. And she showed up with her camera and she was just super nice. And we got to talking at dinner and she was like, yeah, you know, I'm from Owatonna, Minnesota. And I was like, oh, I know where Owatonna is. Isn't that where Owl City's from? The singer. And she's like, yeah, actually, he's my boyfriend. And I was like, no way. Adam Young's your boyfriend? And so anyways, I was like, okay, that's cool. Fast forward to a couple years later, I just shot the music video for Marley, the hip hop artist. And, I get a call from a friend who's getting married and she asked if I come back to Minnesota and shoot her wedding. And so, I flew back. This was like not that long ago. This was 2017. So this is like, you know, a year and a half ago. So I went down there, shot the wedding, and lo and behold, the photographer, Abby, was there again doing the wedding for her. And so we kind of reconnected. It had been a couple years. But, you know, I was like, hey, you know, again, this kind of just...
awesome,
you know, like just putting myself out there. I was like, you know, I just shot my first music video, and, you know, I don't know if Adam's got any new music coming out, but... you know, I really want to do more music videos. So if you need somebody, just keep me in mind and, you know, let me know. And she was like, yeah, oh yeah. You know, he has some new music coming out. I'll definitely tell him. And I was like, I didn't really think of anything of it, you know, cause people say that, whatever. Right. I didn't expect to hear back. But a couple of weeks later, I got back to DC, kind of went back to, you know, working. I was working with Archdiocese at the time.
Did you send her the music video that you just did? Like,
yeah, I sent her, you know, I was like, hey, you know, this is a thing I just did and a couple other my projects. And so a couple weeks later, I got a message from her and she said, hey, Max, you know, Adam's got a new song coming out and I think you'd be perfect for it. And I was like, oh, all right. Okay, here we go. I'm going to do a music video for Owl City. And, you know, so that, yeah, that was just like, wow, you know, like this door that opened up, you know, that I just didn't expect. And so I think I took the phone call with Adam, like on my lunch break from, you know, my job at the Archdiocese, you know, so like, I was like, you know, working at the Archdiocese in this office, this job I didn't really like, and then, you know, going on the phone to talk to, you know, this, you know, like international, you know, musician, superstar, you know, yeah, whatever. And it was a surreal experience for sure. And, but it went really well again. So JP shot that too. And, it's cause we'd just done the music video together. And so I brought him on for that again. And we went up to Minnesota and just did it. And it turned out great.
Mm-hmm. So did you like have imposter syndrome at all during that project?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't think that really goes away, you know, like,
yeah,
I still have that, you know, I'm still coming to terms with the fact that, you know, people ask me what I do for a living and I'm a film director, you know, like this has been, you know, my whole story, which I've been talking about has been, you know, over the last 10 years. So it feels like it's been, but with the film stuff, it's really just, it's been relatively fast, you know, like the last 3 or 4, you know, 3 years really. And so to kind of have that quick of a door open up, you know, like it's, you definitely, you step into sort of an unknown area that stretches you and, you know, yeah, it's true. You are inexperienced. You really don't know what you're doing, but I think you come to realize that, you know, everybody feels that way. you know? Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I kept hearing when I was, you know, I think that gave me consolation. I probably wouldn't have had the confidence to do it, but I think a lot of people, you know, share that same experience of like, you know, you don't know what you're doing. You just have to figure it out, but you have to have confidence in your abilities too, that, you know, trust what got you here. So.
Yeah. I think like one of the things that I've been really thinking about too, is that like, I'm so grateful for the death of my like original dreams, because like moderate success in those was actually a really bad thing for me, because it was like just enough to keep me doing the wrong thing, you know? When it fell apart or whatever and I stopped, it just like I felt like I was just rejected, like I wasn't a good enough artist or whatever, like I was just gonna be, you know, whatever this was, like doing the 9-to-5 thing forever. And like I knew I was made for more, but I just felt like I couldn't hack it. And it was the greatest thing. Like I wish I could go back and tell myself, like, it is so good that you failed at this. Like, it's great that you did it, and it's great that you like learned everything that you learned, because that's going to get used. But, yeah, like let go of the thing that's not working, because there is going to be something for you that's actually going to like be amazing, you know?
So true.
It's like such a cool thing to see in your story, right? Like that, there was this failure, but also like the sense of like desperation for the other thing, for like the art to just be a maker, and like going after that so relentlessly. I think it's just beautiful, man. It's an amazing, amazing thing. And when you like touched on the piece that was like, this is it, this is the anointing, like you just like doubled down, you know? So for people that are out there, like, you know, in the group, what advice would you have for helping them to see the difference between like something they should stop doing and something they should like double down on? Because when you're in it, like, it's not as clear.
Yeah, no, totally. And and even when you have, it's the funny thing is like, even when you have success, you still have like these doubts, you know? So I think it's like one of these things that you just have to put yourself in the right disposition, I think, first of all, to, you know, be trying to listen to, you know, God, listen to, you know, the people God's put in your life, I think is an important one. I've been really thankful for the last few years as I've been pursuing this filmmaking thing to have my wife alongside of me, because she's been, you know, my biggest supporter, but she's also been just a voice of reality and, you know, practicality. And also she's my partner. She's my, you know, she's along the ride with me, you know, so she has a lot to say about it. And, you know, so having that sort of, having someone that can speak into your life and be honest with you. I don't know if you can hear my baby.
Yeah, he'll be honest with you, man.
Right on cue.
Speaking into your life whenever he wants.
I just feel, is it like that video of the guy who's like doing an interview, like some really official interview for CNN or something, and his baby like runs in? That's how I feel right now. So I would say that's a big thing, you know, is having that, that voice of you know, someone. Because early on, you know, Aubrey like questioned me too. She was like, you know, is this really, you know, like you're talking about, you know, this is a big deal. Some of the things you're talking about, like wanting to work for yourself and wanting to be, you know, an artist and do this filmmaking thing. Like you don't really know how to use a camera. Like, you know, like how are you going to, you know, like, and I wanted to quit my job early on, and it was like, no, like you can't quit your job. You know, like I needed that at the time, you know? But then when it was unfolding and it was like clearly, you know, things were happening and doors were opening, she was also right there to be like, yes, like something's happening here. Like it's clear, like God's working. And, you know, and then when I, you know, made the decision to quit my full-time job, like she was, you know, maybe not initially like super excited about it, but she, you know, was really heroic and just like, you know, trusting God and the way he was speaking to me and in my heart. And so I think that's really important, you know, to have accountability. Everybody's situation is different. Like I would never go as far to tell somebody like when they should stop doing something, because I think that's, you know, ultimately their own discernment. But I think when you can bring other outside voices and accountability and you know, people who you can trust and are honest with you, that really helps. Because like you said, when you're in it and you're the one that's so attached to it and passionate, it can be hard to like really be objective about it. And then also to like ask yourself, like, I think one of the big areas for me was like when that music dream died, it wasn't like, oh, like, woe is me. Like, I'll never get to do what I was passionate about. Like, this is, you know, I was so precious about this one thing, you know, like it was like, well, what else can I do that's creative? You know, it's like, if you're a musician, even in music, like there's a million different things you could do in the area of music. You know, if you're into art and design, like there's a lot of different things now, you know, with technology that you can do in the area of art and design. Like, be open-minded to other areas, that if something's not working, you're pushing on a door, it's not opening. Like, think about, you know, just be really open-minded and really creative. Because I think we're living in a time and we're living in an age where creativity and technology, like, they're really, like, is sort of this opportunity to, as an artist, to really make a living for yourself in a way that's never been possible. Like, the whole artist, you know, starving artist idea is, like, not, I don't think that's the reality anymore. Like, I think you can, if you can be creative and you can, you know, be resourceful and take advantage of the, you know, the internet and the fact that you can literally set up your own website in 10 minutes on Squarespace and have something that looks really pro, you know, like quickly, and start selling your services. Like, there's great opportunity there. And, you know, be creative, be open-minded, you know, be thinking about how you can utilize your gifts in other ways. Maybe you're thinking a certain way, but you're just being too kind of narrow with your vision, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I totally see that, man. So, are you coming to the summit?
I would love to. I would love to. I mean, I haven't made a decision on it or not, but
all right.
I know I missed out last year, so it looked like a lot of fun.
You ought to come. And for anybody that's listening, you know, you can heckle him so that you can see him there and talk more about this stuff. But just in terms of kind of closing out, like, how has this whole process taught you, like, to see God differently? How has it affected your, like, spirituality? And is there anything, any takeaway on the spiritual level that you would want to leave everybody with?
Well, I think, yeah, just generally speaking, you know, the way I've seen God work in my career path, I mean, you know, God has worked in a number of different ways outside of just my job, you know, and opened up my doors for, you know, filmmaking. But the way I think distinctly seen just, you know, his providence and, you know, his hand on it, his anointing, has just, you know, shown me that, like, you know, he puts desires in our heart for a reason. And if we can trust him, and if we can be, you know, honest with him, and we're willing to kind of wrestle with him, to get at what he wants, that he'll take us there. And that it's not just about what he wants. He also wants to, you know, simultaneously give us what we want and more. Because I think where he's taken me on this journey of, you know, my own artistic desires and creativity, from where I was and what I wanted is just like beyond what I could have planned, you know, it's beyond what I could have envisioned. And, you know, it's kind of cliche to talk about it like that. You know, it's like, oh, what I wanted, you know, so much smaller than what God wanted for me. But it's just the truth, you know, like, it's just so real. Like, you know, I so badly, you know, wanted things to work out a certain way, and they didn't, you know. And it was kind of like that compost analogy you gave earlier, you know, like, that's great, you know, like, out of that, you know, just wreckage, like, he brought something so, like, just that makes so much sense, you know, as far as who I am and the way he's worked in my life. Like, it just makes so much sense, and it's so much better. So
Sweet. So how do you feel like people can like enter into that or like take that into their own spirituality? Do you have any like practical takeaways like for how they can pray or how they can digest that wisdom?
Yeah. I think, you know, just be honest with yourself. Allow other people to speak into your life, honestly. You know, when you recognize, and everybody, like I said, it's different for everybody. Everybody's in different places, you know. But if you find yourself like with that desire to create and that desire to be an artist, whatever field it is, you know, don't let the world snuff it out. You know, I think for some of us, like it's going to be really hard to overcome the sort of the obstacles, you know. Like I said, there are real risks, you know. If you want to do something like work for yourself, if you want to be a, you know, if you want to be a graphic designer, or, you know, a filmmaker, a musician, whatever, like, yeah, that's not traditionally what, you know, maybe some of your peers are doing, but, you know, the world needs artists too. And, you know, there's a certain job we have as artists and creatives to, you know, there's a great utility that we bring to the world. And don't let the world tell you or whoever it is, you know, like your parents, your professors, whatever. Like, don't let them tell you that what you want to do is not sustainable or not, you know, smart or not prudent, you know. Chase that dream with vigor and, you know, and be passionate about it and take risks, you know, because it's worth it. And we need your gifts. You know, the world needs your gifts.
Yeah. One of the final things that I feel like I'd like to add in that is that, like, nobody would have gotten to meet, you know, Max, the talented director, if, like, you hadn't at least tried to follow the rapper dream, you know? Like, there's a certain amount of just putting your feet down on that and risking for that you had to go through to even see that it wasn't exactly the right note, you know, but it was part of the journey to getting to this like other artistic I guess sort of level. So yeah, I just want to encourage everybody as well that that's listening, in terms of that whole like following the dream, like follow it hard for sure, like start it, and then if the direction that you're going in isn't working or feels like really wooden and there's like a certain amount of like not rightness to it, it doesn't mean that you're not called to be an artist or that you need to like commit to the 9-to-5 thing. It just might mean that you've got a different, like a different and bigger calling on your life than the thing that you're pursuing at the moment, you know, chase the anointing. But yeah, Max, thanks so much for coming on and taking the time to do it. And thanks for all the risks that you have taken in your own life to sort of give everybody a, I don't know, like a roadmap with your life to say like, look, you can fail and be a success, you know, like this is, I think anybody that's listening to this is going to be able to see themselves in your story. So really appreciate it.
Thanks, Anthony. It's been a pleasure. And yeah, if my story can inspire somebody else, that's great. That's a great outcome.